Okay, we'll begin Mamar Sheni at the end of Ois Chof Vav. Last week, we finished off with this whole... We finished a very lengthy and elaborate discussion on the mechanics behind the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, how it works, how it compares to the body, the sustenance of the body, etc., etc., etc. So is the Kuzari laying down, setting in stone, what the idea behind the Karbanos are? So here he comes to clarify. And this piece in itself is something of a disclaimer, but it's very fundamental in and of itself, this disclaimer. So he finishes off that whole beautiful description as follows. Ein ani goyzer cholila. He says, heaven forbid, I am not determining shakavana me'avoida azois va'aseda asha asher zechati, that the idea behind the service in the Beis HaMikdash is as I described. Take that. Because avomashu yoiser niflo v'nalo, he says, no, it is definitely much deeper and greater than that. V'sheitero me'eso elikim yisbach. At the end of the day, this whole system was dictated by Hashem, and therefore, it doesn't need our explanations. V'shekiblo kibul sholim mibli sheyitzchakim bo b'sichloi. A person who's capable of just accepting it all and conforming to it all, without having to properly understand it, is greater than the person who needed to understand and needed to research the reasons behind it. Because what he's saying is that really, any reason that you'll give won't be able to really encompass the true concept. Why? Because once again, we're talking about all of our logic, understanding, appreciation is all limited. It's in a box. Hashem doesn't work with our rules of logic. Hashem created very limited, specific rules of logic that we operate with. And as far as we're concerned, that's the immensity of the human mind. But really, all the human mind could possibly comprehend is limited into a tiny box. And Hashem is so much bigger than that. The mitzvah of Hashem is bound to be so much bigger and so much beyond that little box that the human mind is. And therefore, it's certainly much bigger than that. Beyond our comprehension. And really, we should be able to just appreciate that itself and do it just because of that. Hashem said, to do it, I understand that I'm dealing with Hashem who is way beyond anything I can comprehend, so I understand that the import of his commands are way beyond anything I can comprehend. But yet he says, why did I provide this whole explanation? So listen, a person who's not quite on that level of just being able to appreciate that the word of Hashem is immense just because it's the word of Hashem, and he does want to probe it with his own understanding, better to glean from them these pieces of wisdom as we've described it. In other words, he's saying it's better that I should give these explanations, which are certainly more aligned with the true Torah approach, than that people should start trying to understand it and maybe going in the wrong direction, etc. So he's kind of saying that the whole idea of trying to explain the concept of the Karbanos is, in a sense, b'di'evet. Not really the ideal. Now the truth is, we'll note that at the same time, many Sfarim, besides the Kuzari we're just seeing here, there are many Sfarim that do engage in giving reasons for the mitzvahs. Many very profound Sfarim. Rabbi Hirsch, Shimshon Fall Hirsch, has a whole big, thick sefer, Chorei, dedicated to that, explaining reasons for the different mitzvahs, the different halachas that we do. Many of them of Farshim of the Chumash are busy with that. So here we have to understand an important point. Reasons for mitzvahs, what do we call it in Hebrew, in Lashon Kodesh? A reason for a mitzvah? Tam. What does tam mean? Taste. What's the connection between the word reason as a reason for a mitzvah and taste? So, Ibn Janach he was one of the very early Rishonim. He was, Rashi drew a lot of his diktuk from Ibn Janach. Rabbeinu Ibn Janach. So he wrote a very, very profound point in his Pirush on the Chumash. He said that a tam for a mitzvah, which is translated as a mitzvah, reason for a mitzvah is exactly that, it's taste. Does a food's taste give you any indication of the food's value? No. If anything, reverse, right? If it tastes a little too good, it's probably not good. Right? That doesn't have to be that way. But taste has nothing to do with the food's nutritional value. Just what? It makes it palatable. Right? It's food. You got to take the food. You have to eat. There's taste. Taste attracts you to the food. Now, once you eat the food, you enjoy its taste, then you get the food's nutritional value. So he says, that's how it is with the Ta'amei HaMitzvahs. Ta'amei HaMitzvahs are taste. Yes, there is purpose in trying to give reasons for the mitzvahs. But you have to understand that it's like taste. The true nutritional value of a mitzvah is always going to be way beyond you. The true value of a mitzvah, the essence of the mitzvah, the real reasons behind the mitzvah. Like we said, you have to be Hashem in order to really encompass it. Yet, the purpose of giving reasons for the mitzvahs, of understanding reasons for the mitzvahs, is in order to give us, like we say, to give us a geschmack. If we can gain a geschmack in doing mitzvahs, that's a good purpose in and of itself. But like the Kuzari is telling us here, as profound reasons as you're ever going to understand of a mitzvah, always realize that by definition, a command of Hashem, l'maisa, goes beyond human comprehension. And that's the real reason that we do the mitzvahs. That's the real depth behind the mitzvahs. Just what? Any taste that we can get out of it is a good thing, because the more of a geschmack we do the mitzvahs with, the better. And therefore, for example, you see, this is very interesting. You see that, let's say, authorities from 500 years ago gave reasons for mitzvahs that were based on concepts of science that were prevalent at the time, but that by today were completely debunked. So does that mean that those reasons go down the drain? No. It's like we're saying anyways, the whole purpose of the reason is to give a geschmack. If at that time it did that, it was a true reason. Today, there might be different reasons. Because the reasons anyways are not really the reasons. The reasons are an issue of for us to enjoy it. And it's more than that. It's not just that we're coming up with some made-up reason. Hashem may have intended those things as well. And Hashem intended those things because there are very many different levels of the reasons for the mitzvahs. But understand that whatever understanding you have of a mitzvah, by definition, it inevitably is not the full scope of the mitzvah. Because the full scope of the mitzvah is Hashem's mind. And Hashem's mind, kiviyachol, is way beyond the scope of the most intellectual of humans. So therefore he says, remember that at the end of the day, after all the profound discussions about the Beis HaMikdash, etc., that's all just for us. Really, it's way beyond our comprehension. And that itself, for the person who's on the right madrega, he'll appreciate doing the mitzvahs just because of that. Okay. But whatever it is, the king of Kuzar is blown away by his whole exposition on the parallel between the whole system of the mikdash and the body, etc. So Amar Kuzari. Kuzari says, Hiflesa hachover b'masha dimisa. Your comparisons, your analogies are beautiful. However, he says, you skipped something that I didn't hear you address. He basically lined up all the different elements of the Beis HaMikdash and of the Avodah with the different parts of the body and the body functions. But I don't know if you noticed, because there were so many details last week, there's one part of the body that was not discussed last week. And what's that? But there's one major part of the body that you didn't mention. The head. The head with all of its faculties. You didn't mention that. He says, I also didn't hear you say anything about the Shemen HaMishcha. Okay. So, Omar HaChover. So the Chover answers. Emesu. Shesheresh HaChokma Mufkad Baroin HaShehu B'Madrega Saleh. As we discussed last week, the heart is the Oren, right? Now we have to get to the head. But the heart, which he considers the main place, most vital place, is the Aron. And that's where all divine wisdom channels through. Meaning, the Aseres HaDibros, which were in the Aron, which is Hashem's presentation of the Torah to us. Kama Shamar, like he said, Misamta Oisoi, Mitzad Aron Bris Hashem. And now he says, the way, it's like we described in the previous weeks, spirituality is drawn from the upper world, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol, into the Kodesh HaKodashim. From there it spreads to the rest of the Beis HaMikdash, and from there it channels to the all the rest of Klal Yisrael, all the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Think of it in terms of the heart, right? How does it work? The heart is the major source of life blood. The heart gives a beat. It hurls out a whole bunch of blood, and all that blood flows through all the arteries into which branch out into, I don't know, thousands or millions of arteries and arteriolias, or however you pronounce it. Right, smaller and smaller, branching out, reaching every last corner of the body. That's how it works with the influx of Shechina, of spirituality in the Beis HaMikdash. It all comes, Hashem, the Shechina Kiviyachol, is at the Aron, and from there it beats. That's the heartbeat that sends it pulsing to all of the Jewish people. So now he says, Misham Teitzen Ashtei HaChokhmas. The divine word that is pulsing from the Aron comes out to the Jewish people through two mediums. Chokhmas HaTorah v'Noseo HaKohanim. It comes through the Torah and the bearers of the Torah, the Kohanim. The Kohanim were the teachers of Torah. In other words, a Chokham learning Torah is connecting to that divine influx and drawing from it and bringing it to the rest of the Jewish people. Now we should stop here for a minute and in parentheses just note what's being stated here. Unlike all the other chokmas, a person learns science. Okay? Let's say you learn a science book, you learn a physics book written by Einstein. I don't know if he wrote physics books. Let's say he wrote a physics book. Right? And you're studying his chokma. Einstein is dead. Right? And his chachma is technical. It's there in the book. And you're absorbing it from the book. Right? There's no chachma being produced right now. It's not like when you open up that book to read it, there's chachma being produced. There's chachma being manufactured at the time and being brought into the world. It's not like you're bringing more chachma into the world. The chachma is there. Right? People can go and comprehend it. People can go and study it. The Chachma is there. You're not adding anything. Very different with Torah. With Torah, when you sit down to learn Torah, you are actually drawing that Chachma into the world. That's what we say. Hashem yiten Chachma mipiv das usvudim. When a person is learning Torah, he's actually drawing of Hashem. Drawing of Hashem into this world. It's Chachma that's being produced right now. It's not just that you're learning the arguments that Rav and Abaye said 1,500 years ago. And, all right, it's been analyzed by many people up till now, and you're analyzing it again. Nothing really new happened, except that now you added yourself to the list of people who study it. No. It's a chokhmah, it's different. People are actually drawing on the divine presence that's present in this world. By learning Torah, you're drawing that into yourself, and you're actually bringing it into the physical world. You're bringing Shekhinah into the physical world. Now, the way it worked in the time of the Beis HaMikdash was, there was that presence of Shekhinah in the Aron. This was really the Torah that was now available to the Jewish people. When the Kohanim came and learned Torah, they were drawing from that Shekhinah, bringing it into themselves, and then letting it out to the rest of the Jewish people. That's the process of learning Torah and teaching Torah. That's one way of bringing the divinity. It's not just bringing the divine word. It's not just that you're bringing the word. You're actually bringing the divinity itself to the people. The other way of bringing the Shekhinah itself to the people is through the medium of Nevuah. The Chokhmas HaNevuah V'Nosei HaNevi'im. Then there's the divine word that comes through the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im are actually bringing the word of Hashem to the people. Okay? Note, by the way, that this is also very interesting. Realize that Torah and Nevuah are being put on equal footing. The Chazanish basically says this. That the difference between Nevuah and Torah is that Nevuah is something, it's really coming from the same source, that both people are drawing it directly from Hashem, just that Nevuah is something that's not initiated by the recipient, right? Hashem brings the Nevuah upon the recipient. Torah is something that the learner goes and actually draws out by himself. But it's actually really the same mechanism. You are actually now bringing the live word of Hashem into the world. When you go and learn and teach halacha of Silbash, temeru pishtim yachtov, you're not allowed to wear wool and linen together. You're not repeating an old teaching. You're bringing in the word of Hashem. It's a new word of Hashem that's now being produced. New Torah that's being produced. You're bringing the word of Hashem into this world, and you're conveying it further. So yes, the divinity is in the Aron, and it's conveyed through these mediums. Those who are studying the Torah, they are coming and drawing from that divinity through the Torah and conveying it to the people. And then there's the Nevuah. Also, that divinity comes, it channels through the Nevi, and the word of Hashem comes to the people. Veheim hayu k'moy hayoyatzi hamekirim hamazhirim ha'uma v'hamazkirim. These two mediums, the Kohanim and the Nevi'im, are like the counselors of the body that we've discussed before. Just like we discussed before, that the body has all kinds of mental faculties, right? That warn it to keep away from danger, right? Experience, memory, all these things warning you to keep away from danger. If as a kid you didn't listen to your mother and you got a little too close to the fire and you got burned, that experience serves you well in the future. Because up till now, your mother told you fire is hot. So you tried to be a good boy, but you didn't make a point of keeping too far. If you actually experienced it, that experience, the memory, that it's a mental faculty that actually serves as an advisor for you. From now on, as soon as you start getting a little too close to fire, from within you, you'll get that warning, keep back, and you jump back. Those are the mental faculties of the person. So, the Chacham says, the mental faculties of the Jewish people, if we're likening it to the body, are the Nevi'im and the Torah teachers. They're like the memory that warns a person, keep away from this, this is dangerous. Or go get food, you're hungry. Right? All of those inner stimulants that protect a person from harm, or that drive a person to do what he needs to do, that's what the Kohanim and the Levi'im were, and the Nevi'im were. The prophets and the Torah teachers were analogous to those faculties. And now we get to a very important point, because we said, okay, the Kohanim, the Torah, and the Nevi'im, these are basically, like he's saying, the brains of the Jewish people. And where did they draw their power from? The Aron, the Kodesh HaKadosh. What happens today? Today there is no Kodesh HaKadosh. Does that mean we lost our brains? So let's see. Omar Kuzari. The Kuzari says, Im Kain. If so, you're telling me that it's all an issue of that the source, the heart that pumps all that blood is the Aron with the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the brains of the Jewish people are the Nevi'im and the Kayhanim who draw from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that divine presence. If so, now that you don't have any of this, Atem Hayoim Guf Beloi Roishu Beloi Lev. You're like a body without a heart and without a head. Wow, how is the Chavar going to get around this one? And the answer is he doesn't. And here we're going to start appreciating what we're missing when we're missing the Beis HaMikdash. Omar HaChavar, the Chavar answers in a surprising way. Kein hu ka'asher dibarto. You're right. It's exactly as you said. The brains of the Jewish people, the head of the Jewish people, the heart of the Jewish people draw their vitality from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the divine presence of the Aron. And now that there is no Aron, the Jewish people are functioning without a head and without a heart. Did you ever see a person functioning without a head and without a heart? There are plenty who do, just that they're in Hara Menuchas. Right? There you can function fine without a head and without a heart. So he says, you're right. We are like a body without a head and without a heart. That's the Jewish people today. The oid, the loy guf. But he says, who's our king? You're being a little too generous. You said that we're a body without a head and without a heart. The truth is, it's not a body either. You know, what the state of the Jewish people is now? It's scattered bones. Scattered, dried bones. He says, and this is the significance of the famous Nevuah of Yechezkel. Right, that's what we read on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach. Remember, Yechezkel had a Nevuah in which he saw a valley full of dry, dead bones. He says, that actually is a mashal of the Jewish people without the Beis HaMikdash. The Imkolze Melech Kuzar. Now, the Jewish sage is preempting the Kuzar's next point. He's going to say, so if so, you are an extinct nation. You're an obsolete people. And you're saying, that's it, you lost your brain, you lost your heart, your flesh has decomposed, all you are is a collection of dry bones. So that's it. Your time is finished. You're dead. You're 6 feet under. Now, maybe other religions take the stage. So he says, "Vim kol zeh melech Kuzar." However, King of Kuzar, "Va'atzomay sashonisha b'em teva mitivei achayim." At the end of the day, dead bones have more lifelike matter. Especially since at one time they did actually serve a functioning brain and heart and soul and intellect. Says, what is more lifelike? What's closer to being alive? A dry dead bone or a beautiful picture, a beautiful painting of a live, robust person? What's closer to being alive? What's closer to life? A dry, dead bone. A dry, dead bone is a lot closer to life than that person on the wall, even though look at him. He's the picture of health, right? He's ruddy, strong, muscular. Yeah, but he's not a person. And the bone, the dead bone, is closer to life than that person. So even our guf is some tzios. What's that? Well, there are different degrees of lifeless. Once was, but it isn't. But at the end of the day, its materials are going to be more similar to materials of living matter. It's closer to living matter than a picture on a wall. What we're saying is that it's closer. You're right, dead is dead. But we're saying what's closer. The reason this is important, well, we'll see why this is important. But let's see. The bone is closer to life than that picture, even though it's got a heart, it's got a head and open eyes and ears, it's got all of its limbs in a perfect state. However, it never actually had a live spirit in it. And there's no way for life to ever connect to it. These are things that resemble man on the most superficial level, but they're not man. I'll give an example. Right? You can take a dead bone, you might be able to use things from a dead bone for a live person. At the end of the day, it's not alive. But it's a lot closer to living matter than these things. Now, why is this important? And the answer is, well, we'll see him bring it out at length as we go along. But the answer is because really the key word in this discussion is relative. Relative. When we say that we're like dry, dead bones, I ask you, is Judaism today dry and dead? There's plenty of Torah, there's plenty of mitzvahs. How can you call that dead? But the answer is that everything's relative. Relative to the vitality of Judaism in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, Judaism today is a dry, dead bone. So the point here is not to view ourselves as dead, because we're as alive as we think we are. It's just to understand what real Judaism was. We can't really understand, but just to understand that the difference between us and what real Judaism was, the vitality of real Judaism in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, is like the qualitative difference between a dry, dead bone and a live, functioning body. Meaning, at the end of the day, yes, the bone does have certain lifelike matter in it. It might still have some marrow that could be connected to a dead body. But it's very, very remote from being alive. So yes, we have a little bit of Torah left in us. A little bit of mitzvahs, a little bit of the Jewish experience. But that, in comparison to what Jewish life was in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, is the same as that dead bone in comparison to a live body. What's that? Who says if we had it today, it will? Nobody says. That's why we don't have it today. Why didn't it last? There's never a question. Because they were never robots. That's why they were so great. They were able to fail. And when more people chose to do so, and when too much of it accumulated, it didn't last. If it inevitably had to last, that would mean that they're inevitably so great. And then there would be no point. But yes, in the time of... What's that? Not responsible for their failure, but the two go together. They're only great if they could fail. If they could fail, then maybe they would fail. What's that? What do you mean by mediocre? Sure you can strive to succeed. You can't get anywhere near what life was like in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. You can strive to succeed on the level of dry, dead bones, which as far as we're concerned is our functioning goals. But again, the key word here is relative. I say, if you want to talk in terms of a live body, today we're dry, dead bones. But it's like we say many times. Dry, dead bones, being a dry, dead bone of a Jew, is a very, very worthwhile lifetime. Life. It's just that, relative to what it could be, if we were living with the Shekhinah, it's a dry, dead bone. But to be a dry, dead bone, to live dry, dead bone Judaism, is a very, very worthwhile lifetime. And yes, he's saying that that's what, excuse me for saying this, but this is what he's saying. That's what the Vilna Gaon was. That's what Rashi was. That's what the Rashba was. This is dry, dead bone Judaism. And on the contrary, this shows us how glorious dry, dead bone Judaism is. And if so, it gives us a little bit of an inkling of how great the experience of being a Jew was in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash. Again, if you chose to utilize it, you could always choose to fail. At the end of the day, it was an issue of Bechira. So, and that's why, yeah, the Gra takes this a step further. That's why I allowed myself to use the example of the Gra. But the Gra says, he basically makes the same point of the Kuzari, he says the difference in quality between the Jewish people in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash and the Jewish people right after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is the difference in quality between a live body and a dead body. And he says that by today, the state has reached the state of a spoonful of rot. After the body has decomposed, the rotten mush. What? Yeah. Of the slime, of the rotten mush that's left after the whole decomposing system. But the truth is, that's what the Vilna Gaon was saying about his Yiddishkeit. So apparently, when you're talking in terms of Yiddishkeit, a dead bone or a spoonful of slimy mush can be very, very, very great. But it should make us long for the real experience of Judaism when we're actually connected to the Shechinah. So Amar Kuzari, the Kuzari says, Kidvarcha Kengu, you're right. I don't know what you're getting at, but you're right when you say that a dry, dead bone is more lifelike than a picture on a wall. So the sage says, I'll tell you what I'm getting at. Amar Chaber, Ki ha'umais akub, asher choshvili damais la'umah ha'chaya. He says, because you have the different nations that consider themselves the spiritual heirs of the Jewish people. The Christians, the Muslims, they claim that they're the continuation of the Jewish people. Because they also understood that the Jewish people had reached a certain end with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, with the exile. Right? He says, Lo yachlu lahasig el yosim en adimin en ira. And you might say, look, the Jewish people are in disrepair, and look at the Christian nation. Or look at the Muslim nation. They're in their full glory. Right? He says, no. All they are is a picture on a wall. It's a beautiful picture. It's a glorious picture. It's a very lifelike picture. But there's no life to it whatsoever. It's more remote from life than the dry dead bone. Hekimu batim le'lehim. He says, look. They created all kinds of places of worship. Ve'lo'inira b'hem le'lehim ois. But was there any manifestation of the divine presence there? In the Beis HaMikdash, the Shekhinah's presence was manifest. Is there any manifestation of the divine presence there? Nothing. Hufrashu v'hunzeru l'hari salem anevuah v'lo'inirasa. They practiced all forms of abstinence and all kinds of things like that in order to become very pious and holy. Did they ever achieve prophecy? They never did. Moreover, he says, you want to see another manifestation of the fact that they're not the real thing? Listen to this. Ichnifu v'ichnisu ubatu. When they sinned, when they angered God. Do we ever see them getting punished in an unnatural way? We don't see that either. Do we ever see some plague coming in exact response to a sin on their part? No. The punishments that came upon the Jewish people is another manifestation of their divinity. The fact that when the Jewish people sin is an automatic negative reaction, that tzaras begin is another sign of their connection to the divine. That's why there's a divine reaction. It might be a negative reaction, but it's a reaction. These people can sin all they want. Nothing happens. He says, in the case of the Jewish people, It was their sins that caused the failure of their heart. I.e., Vetzalem Abayisahu, Sheimechavim Elam. Meaning, the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed when we saw that the Jewish people's spiritual level is deteriorating. With these people, do we see their material state reflecting their spiritual state? No. They sin and nothing happens. They act pious and nothing happens. Yes, they have their ups and downs, but it's never reflecting the level of their adherence to their religion. In Yana Mishtanek, if Yeruba Mumiyuta, their successes simply run according to natural means. When there are more of them, they do better. When there are less of them, they do the worst. They work the way any other kingdom works. They have their ups and downs here and there. It's a bit haphazard, depending on natural developments. And that's the way it works. You don't see anything uncanny happening with them. Whereas with us, we see that with us, it's always hand in hand. It always goes together. The state of the Beis HaMikdash always reflects the state of the Jewish people as a whole. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, the Jewish people couldn't last long on their land. They went into Golus. And when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, that's when we'll be reinstated. Ben Shenia Rav Aymaat. And it won't depend on whether we're numerous or few. Val Ezeinian Sheyeh Manigenu or Malkenu Vamoshobanu Vamaxikoisonu. It won't depend on whether we have great military leaders or anything like that. Binyin Azer Shanachnu Boy Me Apizul Vagolus. Kel Choy. He says, no, our leader will be Hashem just like he is now in the Golus. He won't depend on great military leaders to reinstate us. The Hashem, who has been running our affairs when we were in the Beis HaMikdash, who is running our affairs in the Golus, will be able to reinstate us regardless of what sort of material state we're in there. So he says, at the end of the day, note, yes, we have very much dropped from our state in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But at the end of the day, you still see it might be very, very diluted. It might be relatively dead. But at the end of the day, we still are connected to life while they are not at all. And he's noting that even in the Golus, you see that the Jewish people live an uncanny existence. That defies explanation, because Hashem is continuing to guide them through the Golus and to lead them through the Golus. Whereas the rest of the nations, their affairs run completely naturally. You don't see any sort of divine reaction to when they're better, when they're worse, etc. So Amar Kuzari came. So the Kuzari says, yes, I recognize what you're saying. It's really inconceivable. And here we have to note, like the Chiddush HaLevavos makes this point. We have to note that even today, in our Golus, we can see the miraculous way that Hashem is tending to the Jewish people. We can see open miracles. Just like the Chiddush HaLevavos says, these are not miracles that are fed to you on a silver platter. These are miracles that you have to take note of in order to appreciate them. That is, has there ever been a case of a nation that was exiled from its land and after 1,000 years still maintaining the same nature, the same identity? It didn't simply blend in with the rest of the nations around it. There's no such phenomenon. It's completely uncanny and unnatural. You never see any time a nation is conquered, it quickly assimilates, it quickly disintegrates. The culture doesn't remain for long, and certainly not for such a long time. How many nations have gone to exile after the Jews, and there's nothing left of them today?
even the nations that themselves exiled the Jews. The Babylonians exiled the Jews, right? They went extinct, and the Jews are still around. Is there anything left of the Roman Empire? Just in history books. The great Roman Empire. They went extinct, and their Jewish underdogs are still around. Mehem Edom, Umayov, Mne Amon, Varom, Uplesheth, Ukazdim, Umadai, Uporas, Vabrahamim, Vatsavim. You list a whole bunch of names of very prominent nations of the past. There's the awesome Rabbim and many others. None of them are around anymore today. The Jewish people is the only nationality that's been off its land for so long that's still around. If you go back to the periods in which the Jewish people were functioning on their land, none of those cultures still exist today. So you see that yes, in as lowly a state as the Jewish people are, you still see that they're plugged into the divine. So the king of Kuzah himself is acknowledging the truth of what the Jewish Chavar is saying. And now the Chavar comes back and brings on the point. After he said that yes, we're like dry dead bones, he's going to come and qualify it in the way that we qualified it before. So Amar HaChavar. And now the sage comes back and says, V'al tachshev ki ma shesiyaticha b'dvarecha v'idor mimenu she'anachnu k'ma yadov ha'amez. Don't think that although I agreed to what you said before, I said that yes, we're like dry dead bones, that I actually meant that we're truly dead. Like I said before, it's all relative. He said it's not really so. Relative to the state of the Jewish people in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it's like a dry dead bone. But are we dead today? Are we devoid of that connection to the divine? No. We're missing that greatest connection. We're missing the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But are we devoid of it? No. We're still plugged in numerous ways. Yesh lanu lishishchabrus beninah hu eloiki. We are still connected. We're still plugged into the divine through other means. Asher samam bris beninu veinoi. Hashem created a number of covenants through which we plugged into Him. Right? We didn't just plug in one place. The Beis HaMikdash is the main power center. Right? And without it, we lost a lot of the power. But it's not just one plug into one outlet. There are a number of plugs, plugging into a number of outlets. That's what we call the bris, the covenants that are between us and Hashem. Each covenant is a plug. For example, Kamila, bris mila is one. Shenema baba haisa brisi nitzachem, bris oilam. Mila is a plug, plugging us into Hashem, plugging us into the divine, in the same way the Kodesh HaKadoshim did. Shabbos, also about Shabbos, it says it's a sign between me and you, it's a bris. We'll see more examples next week, but as usual, we'll stop in mid-sentence.